It's now time for The Sit Down with Don Tony.
The Sit Down, where Don Tony talks one-on-one with his followers.
What are you looking at?
About the world of pro wrestling, pop culture, and so much more.
The Sit Down with Don Tony.
And now, your host, Don Tony.
All right, good evening, everybody. It is August 27th, 2023. Welcome to this edition of The Sit Down, featuring yours truly, Don Tony. I want to thank you very much for joining me. For everybody who is live, big shout out to all of you. Hopefully you give us some good content for us to discuss tonight. For those that may not be familiar with what we do on Sundays, I call it the lazy show. I show up with nothing, and basically what we do is we sit here, we have a sit down, and everybody who is live asks questions, brings up topics, comments, and we talk about it. And wherever it goes, it goes. And as always, super chats are never required, but they are appreciated. They help with the expenses, and they'll always get a little bit of VIP treatment. If you're in the chat room, that's how you can participate. It is free. All you got to do is, before your question, just write it in capital letters, the word question, so I could spot it quicker. And if I do answer yours, you know, wait a few minutes before asking another one. You know, let it spread around a little bit. And I'll do my best to have a discussion. Now, a couple of things right off the bat. Yesterday, we did a three-hour episode of the Don Tony Show, paying tribute to Bray Wyatt and Terry Funk. I mean, every emotion you could possibly think of came out yesterday. Outside of maybe Daphne passing, yesterday was probably the hardest episode I've ever had to do. You know, as I said many times in the past, you know, Terry Funk, my all-time favorite wrestler. He's been my favorite since the 80s. And Bray Wyatt, my current favorite wrestler over the last 10 years, not even close. And they're both gone within 24 hours, pretty much. Hard, man, hard. And yesterday, while we were doing the show, we learned that Bob Barker passed away. Hey, 99 years old. I mean, you can't get much better than that. 99. Wow. You know, he's up in the sky. And, as is Bray Wyatt reuniting with Brody Lee. Terry Funk reuniting with his wife, his father, and others. You know, maybe taking that branding iron out and sticking Dusty Rhodes in the ass with it. I don't know if they have eggs to suck on in heaven, but yesterday was a pretty hard show, man. It drained me. As soon as we were done, I took a couple of Tylenols and I laid down for like 2 hours. And like I said yesterday, if it hit us as fans this hard, imagine what the family and friends and fellow wrestlers must feel like. There is going to be additional tributes tomorrow on Raw. And by the way, just a little programming note for those that aren't aware or, you know, may not have tuned in to my shows before or in a while, I'm going on vacation from September 1st to September 9th. Now, the history show will still drop every Tuesday on schedule. I am recording the rest of the Q&A. I already did most of it, but I'm recording the rest of it this week. And that will drop on Thursday, September 4th. This way, at least we got two shows uploaded during the week that I'm not here. So the next episode of anything that I do will be Sunday, September 10th. But this week, we got a busy week. We're doing a sit-down right now. Tomorrow, we are going to do the Raw post-show at 11:05 p.m. Then on Tuesday night, Kevin and I will be doing WWE Payback preview and predictions. Then we have Wednesday night Dynamite. And yes, I will talk about AEW All In then. I will talk more about this thumbnail. Jack Perry still showing everyone that he is a boy, an immature child. I have some info because I saw a super chat came in moments ago asking about this. I do have some info. It is early, and it is this part is not been made public. I promise you it hasn't been made. It's no big deal. I don't want anybody to think like, oh, DT's got this major exclusive. Nah, that's not the case. And then, like I said, Thursday I'll record the rest of the Q&A, and that'll drop next week. So we got a busy week ahead. All right. As I always do, which is only fair, any super chats that came in early, I answer them first, and then we'll head on over to the chat room and we'll answer away. So big super shout out to Ronnie C., who usually sends his questions early because he wants to be first. Hey, it's okay. I like being first. Thank you for the 10th spot. Have you been able to verify any info on the CM Punk and Jack Perry confrontation in the locker room at All In? All right. I'm going to tell you what I know as of this recording, Sunday night, August 27th at 8 p.m. Things will probably, some blanks will be filled in after this episode. I can almost guarantee it. But there is something online that might be a little bit exaggerated. Now, from what I know, and some of it you saw on TV, the incident happened backstage. This is basically to summarize it. You know, we talked about it recently, that CM Punk and Jack Perry exchanged words because Jack Perry wanted to do a segment on Collision involving Real Glass. And CM Punk said, we don't do that here. And it got a little bit, you know, nasty. And that was that. Well, apparently Jack Perry has been seething since that incident and was going to make sure that not only was he going to use Real Glass today, but he was also at All In. Most tickets sold in the history of any wrestling event. Opening match for a historic event. Looks at the camera and says, that was Real Glass, cry me a river. Jack Perry, you're an immature little baby still, all right? You don't respect elders. CM Punk may be an asshole, and you may not like that somebody older than you that has a lot of power is maybe trying to lecture you. He went into the back after his match. And it was a confrontation today, right before CM Punk's match. And basically CM Punk, you know, was like, what the fuck was that? Now, some places online are reporting that Jack Perry bumped into CM Punk as he was walking in the back, you know, like, you know, oh, did I, excuse me, you're in my way. And then apparently there was loud exchange of words. And the end result was Jack Perry went at CM Punk and CM Punk choked him out. I will tell you, please do not report this. If, you know, do what you want with it, but please, this is early. But I will tell you that, you know, I actually DM'd someone who was there backstage, friend of mine, not close friend, but somebody. I was like, hey, I'm going to be asked this, you know, did this, is this true? And I will tell you that this person said to me that the choking out aspect of CM Punk to Jack Perry was greatly exaggerated. There was an incident, absolutely was an incident, but it may not be as big of a deal. Listen, it's a big deal. Jack Perry was sent to his hotel. Get out of the building. Get out of the building. Now, the thing is, here's the thing, and I'm going to say it. I don't care if, you know, if people think it's an elephant in the room, but I'm going to say it. Do you remember the list of do's and don'ts that AEW put out recently. You can't do this without prior approval. You can do this. You can't do that. You can't do that. You can't drink beers, you know, with fans. You can't bleed in the crowd. You can't do this. You can't do that. Part of that was sparked because of Jack Perry wanting to use glass. It's an insurance risk. I mean, you see how Hook got cut up today? Did you see how bad he got cut up? I mean, he'll survive. The thing is this, and I'm going to say this now. I don't think I'm going to regret saying it this early, but I blame Tony Khan for part of this. And I'll tell you why. Because if he didn't clear that spot where they landed on the windshield, then both Hook and Jack Perry should get in some trouble for it. And if Tony Khan did clear that after what transpired previously, you're inviting the more immature aspect of pro wrestling to feel that they got a one-up on someone. The biggest wrestling event, numbers-wise, in history, and this guy can't wait to go on the camera and say, that was real glass, cry me a river. Jack Perry is a baby. He is still a child. He's a great talent. He's going to be a future star as long as he doesn't get seriously injured. He doesn't fuck up. I don't know him personally, but perception-wise, he's a baby. He's a baby, couldn't wait to stick it. And, you know, sooner or later, this shit's going to blow up again. And I blame Tony Khan because that shouldn't have been said. And I'm curious if the move was allowed. That is my early news for you on that. I will tell you that you got to be careful with the news. I will tell you that, and I'm going to say it, PW Insider and Fightful were pretty freaking accurate in what they said. They didn't see the incident. They are being told by, trust me, bigger names backstage than anybody that I'm friendly with. But understand that there are a lot of little Jack Perrys running around. There are a lot of little elite members running around that don't like CM Punk. There are a lot of people out there that do like CM Punk. And it's going to be skewed sometimes based on, you know, how somebody feels. Plus, you got to remember the game of telephone. You guys ever played a game of telephone when you were younger? When I was in kindergarten, we played the game of telephone. For those that don't know what that is, when I went to kindergarten in first grade, it might have been second grade, I don't know. But I think I had like 30 fellow students in the classroom. And what the teacher did, the teacher whispered something in the first student's ear. Now, it wasn't like meet me after school for cookies. But she whispered something in the student's ear. And then that student whispers the same thing in the next student's ear. And then the next student whispers the same. By the time it got to the 30th student in the classroom, the phrase was totally different. I don't remember what the phrase was, but it was different. And the thing is that, you know, if you start playing a game of telephone based on this incident, some things may be unintentionally exaggerated. So, but an incident definitely happened. So hopefully I helped. Hopefully I helped in some way. Thank you, Ronnie. Charlie Conway with a 4-spot. Thank you, Charlie. He says that he tends to ask a lot of personal wrestling stuff. Cool with me, man. I didn't take personal yesterday, but you got to understand something, you know, and this is not a sympathy, you know, begging for anything, you know, doing all these shows and hosting and websites and streaming and equipment and everything else costs money. And it's much more expensive now than what it was even 15 years ago because we would just talk on a phone, blog, talk radio, whatever it is, and that's it, done. You know, so if I want to give a little bit extra to people who financially help keep what I do alive and in business, you know, I get a little mad when someone says, oh, why can't I get this show for free? I mean, you know, or why is there ads? You know, so that's all. But I don't take it personal. And I ain't mad at you because you're one of my biggest supporters. So please do not take that the wrong way. All right. Thank you, Charlie. Okie dokie. All right. Okay. A few people are asking me right now. Let me tell you right off the bat. No, I did not watch most of All In as of yet. The last couple of days, not necessarily in the greatest pro wrestling frame of mind. I am watching All In on Tuesday. We're not doing a watch party Tuesday. I am doing payback preview and predictions with Kev, but that prediction show is going to be easy peasy. I mean, other than maybe Gunther and Chad Gable being added to it, payback, not going to lie, it looks kind of weak. And I think a lot of the match outcomes are very predictable. I think we're going to fly through it. But I am watching All In. I've already seen drips and drabs of it. And when I see some of you saying that it's your favorite event in 2023 so far, I can't disagree with that. I absolutely, if you feel that way, that is cool, man. You know, some of the matches may not have been exactly what you wanted, but that's okay, man. That's fine. I like putting mayonnaise on my hamburger, you know, because I, you know, if I go to a place and they give me a hamburger, there's no mayonnaise on it. Can I have some mayonnaise? No, you're not I don't have mayonnaise. You know, it's like, all right, maybe I didn't get exactly what I wanted, but I sure got some pretty awesome good shit. But I think out of the entire event, the match that surprises me the most as far as the outcome is Saraya becoming a women's champion. I mean, I have nothing but respect for Saraya. You know, I know she did some really awful, immature shit when she was a lot younger. But, you know, pro wrestling is her life, and she's worked her way back. To me, that was more of, all right, we're back in the UK where Saraya comes from and we're in front of 80,000 plus. Here is her moment that she will tell her grandchildren about when she's in her 70s and 80s. And I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. But still very, very surprised. And yeah, I see the noise online. Hey, Tony, there was only one women's match in the entire All In. When are these people going to learn? When are they going to learn? Just because Athena and Willow Nightingale closed out a Ring of Honor pay-per-view, just because you get two Dynamites in a row where Sheeta closes it out, oh, things are changing. The women evolution's happening in AEW. No, it's not. I'm not criticizing Tony Khan here, but it's a mindset. I said this a thousand times in recent years. You look at these favorite promotions of all time, from Ring of Honor to ECW to New Japan and wherever else, and they never heavily featured women's wrestling. Yes, different era in the case of some of those companies, and I'm not criticizing those companies, but I almost feel like people refuse to accept the fact, because as long as they keep complaining about it, they still keep conversations, and they still get clicks and views, and they still get hits, and they still get this. Get it through your fucking head. He ain't changing unless it starts blowing ratings up and it starts, you know, getting a lot of interest. It's not about, you know, I saw Britt Baker's promo tonight on the Zero Hour. The women now are looked at as the men as equal, that we're not just women wrestlers, we're wrestlers. Yeah, tell that to Tony Khan when only one women's match is on the entire card. You know, I mean, you can convince yourself, but this is not what he is. And I don't understand why people are so fucking brain dead, you know, when that subject comes up. AEW is not a company that is going to have a women's division that is going to be on the level of Impact Wrestling or WWE. You could bring in Mercedes Moné. You could bring in fucking whoever. You know, at the end of the day, you'll get one, two, three decent matches, and then you get the same fucking formula like Jade Cargill and Chris Statlander. Chris Statlander has no feuds going on whatsoever. Ruby Soho, I want to fight you it all out. Okay, There's the feud. You know, come on. Do I wish AEW had more women's wrestling? Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, people trying to make this like, you know, AEW's been around for over 4 years already. Why don't you get it through your head that this is what AEW is as far as women's wrestling goes? All right. I thought that was cool. House of Black paying tribute to Bray Wyatt, putting the lantern down. Sting coming out to Metallica was pretty cool. You know, I mean, it was cool, but, you know, listen, I remember when Sting came out to Metallica in WCW, and trust me, people were not losing their shit at the time. People fucking loved his Sting music, the Crow music. You know, even back when he was still the Surfer guy. You know, bang your head, dang, dang, dang. You know, people weren't losing their shit. Go back and listen when they were playing Metallica. You tell me you see people in the crowd go, ah! You know, it's about nostalgia. It was a cool moment today. It was a cool moment. I'm not criticizing all, but some people, like, you know, over-exaggerating it. You know, live in the moment, man. Honestly, I'm not criticizing them. Live in the moment, man. Have a good time. This week of wrestling sucked. If you had a blast today, whether you were there live or you watched it on TV, good, man. Seriously. Kevin Milwaukee. How unsavory would it be if the writers treated Gunther's intercontinental title reign like they did Nikki Bella and had him lose the title a few days after setting the all-time record? Ain't happening. Ain't happening. Gunther, Nikki Bella was not the Gunther of the women's division. Nikki Bella, you know, I don't even, I'm not going to criticize Nikki Bella, but she was not very, very good in the ring. She, you know, guys, gals tuning in right now, what was your favorite Nikki Bella match of all time? Like, what's the greatest match of her career? What are you going to say? A Stephanie McMahon? People will say a woman's opponent, but they won't say the actual match. You know, she was not that good. But then again, were the Bellas ever used because of their extreme quality of wrestling? No. You know, it was more of a gimmick. It was the Divas, E! Entertainment Network. There was a lot with the Bellas. I'm not taking that away from them. But, you know, to think that Gunther and the quality of his matches and opponents and how much respect he brings to that division, to think that WWE's going to look at him and say, yeah, let's just take it off of him like we did Nikki Bella. As soon as he breaks Honky Tonk's record, it's not going to happen. It's not gonna, and you want to know something? Gunther surpassing a record that has been around since the 80s, to me, is 1,000 times more impressive than Nikki Bella becoming the longest reigning Divas champion of all time. That's no disrespect on Nikki Bella, but, you know, it's like you're comparing a filet mignon with a White Castle hamburger. Ain't happening. It ain't happening. By the way, we found out today that John Cena, that whole idea of Austin Theory and Grayson Waller and LA Knight in India, ain't happening. I think he's teaming up with Seth Rollins to take on Ludwig Kaiser and I believe Giovanni Vinci. Giovanni Vinci. What's up, Rojo Band? Thank you for 30 months being a member of the family. Someone else celebrated and have a, oh, Dorian Mesa. Thank you, my friend. 23 months as a channel member. Thank you. James Young is a new proud member of La Nostra Familia. And Sean Irish, welcome to the family. Neil Ray, celebrating 29 months. Rest in peace, Bray Wyatt. You know, I don't know if you guys are aware of this yet. It is so beautiful. Over 10 WWE wrestlers over the weekend went out to a tattoo place and all got tattoos of Bray Wyatt's, was it the moth, whatever, you know, his logo. Over 10. I know Cross did it. Braun Strowman did it. I don't have the full list. I'm going to talk about it on Monday's show. But if you want to go on social media, it's really, really beautiful. Over 10. WWE stars. And believe me, there's a lot others that are going to do it as well. It's just, you know, some people, this just happened a couple of days ago. I don't even know if his funeral hasn't even happened yet. You know, you can't just suddenly, like, walk into a tattoo place, please, I need this tattoo by tomorrow. You know, it's not as easy as it sounds. But really, really cool to see that. Mike from New York, thank you very much. 19 months as a channel member, member of the family. Seth versus Gunther or Cena versus Gunther, WrestleMania. If I had to choose one of the two, it's not even close. Seth Rollins versus Gunther. But a lot of people want to see Gunther and Brock Lesnar. And I personally would rather see that as well. I think Gunther versus Brock Lesnar would be like the 4.5-star version of Brock Lesnar versus Omos or Braun Strowman versus Omos. Like, I'm not comparing Seth Rollins to Omos. What I mean by that is, you know, you have Brock Lesnar against a giant, a behemoth, a monster. You know, it's interesting. It's very intriguing. And when you see two monsters going at it, it's larger than life. You know, it's like Godzilla versus another lizard. Now you got Brock Lesnar versus Gunther. Could you imagine Gunther chopping Brock Lesnar like that? I want to see it. Not just a little Royal Rumble teaser. For me, the match I want to see at WrestleMania, even if there's no titles on the line, Gunther versus Brock Lesnar. That's the match I want to see. And you know what? I think Brock Lesnar would freaking love to have that match. You know, Brock Lesnar, you know, give him credit, man. From like 10 years ago compared to now, that guy actually is having fun, you know, when he's doing what he's doing. Back then, it's like punch your clock, punch in, do your work, punch out, go home. And he still does that to an extent, but he's having fun right now, and you could feel it on the TV. You could tell when somebody's having fun. And you could tell when somebody is just going through the motions because they got to. Taylor Swenson is asking, when will Mercedes Moné sign with WWE or AEW? Well, first of all, I don't know. I don't believe she is 100% healed regarding her leg injury. When she is actually able to start, you know, getting closer to a return, then I could see her signing. She was it all in. They made sure to show her on the camera more than once, which is fine. She is not contractually obligated to anybody. You know, Tony Khan will pay big money to get someone in. And, you know, it's not even about profits and losses. You know, as us wrestling fans, let's be honest. As wrestling fans, we don't give a shit if Tony Khan is losing $100 million a year. You know, he does an interview, and this is not criticism towards him, but he does an interview over a couple of days ago, and he says that AEW grossed over $100 million. Grossing $100 million is fine. How much did AEW spend to gross that million? You know, if I have a grocery store and I'm taking in $100,000 a week, but meanwhile, I'm spending $120,000 in merchandise. If I just turn around and say, yeah, we grossed $100,000 last week. Wow. But meanwhile, I'm spending $120,000. You know, grossing $100,000 is fine. But again, when you are a billionaire on that level, AEW could lose $100 million. I've said this before. AEW could lose $100 million a year for 20 years. And that wouldn't even be 10% of Tony Khan's bankroll of what he's worth. Because he's got other investments, other projects that are making money. So even if he's taking a bath in AEW, he's still getting it back in a lot of ways. You know, like I said, AEW financially isn't going anywhere. AEW will be around for quite some time. But understand, sure, WWE could find a building and book 100,000 people, 90,000 sold, 85,000 sold, and say, hey, Tony, how do you like that one? you bitch. But WWE has investors to answer to. They got profit margins. They have, you know, their books, their publicly traded company, and then they're going to merge with Endeavor. They can't. Can you imagine if WWE revealed to their investors, yeah, we grossed $100 million, and then the investors find out that they spent $150 million? Those investors would be like, they don't know how to fucking manage money, and they sell their stock. Trust me, AEW will never be a publicly traded company, because if they ever became a publicly traded company, remember the NILs? Does anybody remember 4 years ago, 3 years ago, when MJF and others were trying to sell their cryptocurrency? Anybody remember that? Yeah, nobody really talks about that anymore. You make AEW a publicly traded company, now all the books have to be made public, at least to the investors, to publicly traded company. Listen to the phrase, publicly traded company. Public. AEW does not have to tell me. AEW does not have to tell you. AEW does not have to tell Meltzer, Bruce Mitchell, Santa Claus how much they spend a year. If I'm Tony Khan and somebody asks me that, none of your business. None of your business. Not a publicly traded company. What I do with my money is my business. That's absolutely right. It's none of our business. And if AEW became a publicly traded company, you think that 100 or 90% of the stock is going to be owned by wrestling fans with beards? No. You're going to see fucking investors out there. Look at this upstart. Look at this company trying to go with WWE. Yeah, I want to get behind that. Let me dump a couple of million dollars in stock for that company. I want to see them grow. I think they could be a competitor. I think they could take a little bit of WWE's worth. And then what happens? They have to make their numbers public. And then if you see, why do you think TNA ended up as they were? Does anybody watch Jeff Jarrett's podcasts with Conrad? They are excellent. And it's not just reminiscing when he fought AJ Styles or Kurt Angle or when he went to WWE in 1998. No, they talk about how much money they were losing in 2012, 2013, 2015. Do you remember on this show back in 2013, when Dixie Carter was being interviewed, I think by Forbes or something, and she said, we're cash flow positive. And I went on the show, I started laughing. I think I urinated my boxers that night. Because cash flow positive just means that the bank account is not in the negative. Again, you could put tons of money in it, but if it's not coming back with a profit, sooner or later, the well runs dry, and look what happened. Look at the ownership now. You know, with Tony Khan, though, you don't have to worry about that because Tony Khan has his own nest egg. Yeah, I see on social media people like to joke, you know, with Shad Khan. I made the big mistake. They show him every time the rating is low. They show that one picture of Shad Khan. I made a big mistake. I sound Italian. Hey, how you doing? I made a bigger mistake. Hey, son, what the fuck is wrong with you? But in actuality, this is Tony Khan's deal. This is Tony Khan's money. I'm not sticking up for the guy. I just tell it like it is. So there's a lot of things about TNA that are mirroring AEW. The difference is, this is what Tony Khan wants to do. He's not married. As far as I know, he doesn't have any kids. Imagine having billions. Isn't that like a bad 80s movie? Like a young guy, 40 years old, that has billions and billions of dollars and doesn't have a wife or a husband or kids. You know, it's just got all his money. What does he do with it? Like, he wants to have a wrestling company. I mean, if you have a hobby, some of us have hobbies over the years. Well, we didn't make no money. We just kept putting money into it, money into it, money into it, money into it. Take case of Tony Khan, it is a very expensive hobby. And we get to enjoy it. One fall says that Kevin and I buried Dixie Carter hard. It was just spitting facts, man. It was spitting facts. Okay. Yes, Kevin, if everybody's enjoying the show, smash that thumbs up. I appreciate everybody who sent feedback yesterday. Beautiful, beautiful episode. You know, I'm not saying this for credit. Not only was that the hardest episode I did, we had to do that in less than one day's notice. You know, because Bray, the news came out Thursday. And literally Friday night, I'm putting stuff together and I'm thinking to myself, you know, like, what can I play? What can I air? What can I do? What would be the best way to represent both of them? It was really rough, man, but I'm very proud of yesterday's show. One Falls has a question. Any thoughts of Karrion Kross making his Jesse Ventura impression? Yeah, I talked about that a while ago. He is very, very good. I mean, there are multiple people that talk like Jesse Ventura, but Karrion Kross does a great Jesse Ventura impersonation. I will tell you, on the Q&A episode, somebody asked about Kevin and I having Kross on in a future episode, and I think that will happen. You know, that was something that we talked about before. I have to just go through WWE, and I know exactly who I have to contact. It will not be an issue. People trust, you know, that we're not going to, you know, throw any, you know, curveballs to someone and, you know, make them look like a moron, especially Kross. We're not doing it, but he will do Jesse Ventura on when we talk to him for an episode. We will do an episode, and he will do Jesse Ventura, so... Cat TV, just wanted to share rest in peace to Wyndham. Wyndham made a difference in Cat's life, and Friday broke Cat. I say Cat because I don't know if you're he or she. It was rough, man. It was rough. 36 years old. You know, I was surprised at how many people, you know, were thinking about the Keith Lee situation. When they heard about Bray, it is a lot similar than you realize. It is a lot similar than you realize. You see that video I played yesterday when Bray Wyatt met that little kid. After I watched it, I kind of like felt a little bit regretful of posting that because Bray was talking about his weight. And at that time, Bray was 325 pounds. And from what I understand, Bray might have even been heavier now. And to be heavy and have heart issues, and then you get COVID on top of it, you know, it's a recipe. It's like Russian roulette, man. And, you know, look, it's not even about vaccination. I know some people online were trying to make it about pro-vax, anti-vax. I don't know if Bray was or was not vaccinated. I don't think it mattered. I don't think it mattered. It's just terrible. But as I told a few people today, I had some private conversations today with a few people that tuned into the shows and a few people in wrestling. And the one thing that I said repeatedly, and some of them said repeatedly, you know, for those who were really, truly affected personally by Bray Wyatt, and you'd be surprised how many personal stories are starting to come out now between Wyndham and fans. Carry on his legacy. Celebrate his life. Celebrate his career. Yeah, there were ups and there were downs. Yeah, there was some points that, you know, may not have been, you know, the greatest. But as a human being, as a person, listen, when people out there are being extremely nice about Bray Wyatt right now, they're not saying that about Wyndham because he died. They're saying it because it's true. Everybody that I've ever talked to in wrestling that knew Wyndham always said in so many words the same thing. He's like a big fucking kid. He's like a big kid. He's a nice guy. No temper, anger, just a big kid. Just loved doing what he was doing. Loved to be creative. Loved to think outside the box. And as we said yesterday, not easy to come up with ideas for your character when you're in WWE as a publicly traded company, I guarantee you that there were ideas that Bray Wyatt, Wyndham came up with a long time ago. Hey, maybe I could do this. Oh, you can't do that. It's WWE. Publicly traded, family friend. You can't do that. You know, how many wrestlers out there that think they have the greatest idea? And then you got to realize you got to do it within the confines of WWE. Now, with the Endeavor deal, that will be relaxed a little bit. That will absolutely be relaxed a little bit. For everybody out there that is in, right now insinuating that WWE will go full-blown TV-14 or, you know, going forward, let me say this. Endeavor, TKO, they're not stupid. They see how much money WWE is making right now. They see how many kids and families go to the shows. They are not going to jeopardize that revenue stream because TV-14 is what some people want. I think the Bloodline and some other things, the Judgment Day and others, have proven that WWE does not need to be TV-14 to be cool. The Bloodline storyline might be, in some people's eyes, the greatest storyline since the NWO. And guess what? It's not TV-14. You don't have to be TV-14 to be good. Trust me, I grew up in the 80s, big-time wrestling fan, and a lot of what I saw was not TV-14, and I enjoyed every minute of it. So, Mike is asking, at the end of the day, do I think Edge goes to AEW? No, I doubt it. I doubt it. Listen, I don't want to repeat everything we said last week, but to summarize it, Edge knows where his bread was buttered. Yes, once it becomes TKO, Vince McMahon owns 18% of the company. There's no other McMahon involved in the company. But right now, other than Triple H, there's no other McMahon involved with the company either. It's a publicly traded company. It's technically owned by the investors and Vince. Edge is not going to jeopardize all of the ventures in the future. You know, plus, it's the quality of life, man. It's his wife, it's his kids. It's living to be old and not be in an excruciating pain. You know, Edge does not wrestle a ground game. Edge is not one of those guys that, you know, could do, you know, like a match in their 50s and 60s, and it would be very, it's, I don't want to say, throw shade on Steve Austin, but Steve Austin, when he became Stone Cold, I mean, the only time he ever really left his feet is when he would go on a turnbuckle and jump off and, you know, nail someone with a punch or whatever it is. I mean, the guy was not, didn't have to do any crazy shit. It's a ground game. Edge, it's a different level. The guy does not want to live his latter years, you know, in a lot of pain, re-aggravate the injury. I don't see him going to AEW. But I also feel that if he ever did go to AEW, once his AEW stint was up, I could see TKO bringing him in. Do you think Dana White, do you think Ari Emanuel, you think some of these others are going to say, you went to the competitor, stay with them, we don't want you? No, it's business. At the end of the day, it's business. But I personally don't think that Edge would go to AEW. And it's not because AEW is a bad thing, right? I just think that he's a WWE lifer. Reminds me of Undertaker, reminds me of Shawn Michaels, it reminds me of others. There are some people out there that it just feels. Listen, let's also be honest. You know, a lot of people seem to forget this fact. Why is Christian in AEW? Why is Christian in AEW? Because WWE did not want to re-sign him. They did not feel that Christian was a fit on the roster. They were pushing a lot of guys of tomorrow. Christian would have been enhancement talent. As ridiculous as that sounds, Christian would have been pretty much enhancement talent. Let's also bring up the fact that Christian, I think, has only had two matches in a year. Like, two matches, three? Like, he hasn't had many matches. So, yeah, they could have kept him on the contract and had him only have two or three matches, but that's not what Christian was looking to do. Remember, when he came into AEW, he had a shirt that said, outwork everyone. Not outwork three people, you know, outwork once a year. You know, we were under the perception that Christian was back. He looked great. Why can't he go? You know, be a part-timer, but not part-timer as in only a couple of matches a year. WWE did not want Christian. It's ridiculous that sounds. Now, WWE did not want Christian. But let's also be honest. Christian would not be able to say half the things he says in AEW in his promos if he was on WWE TV. You know, that extra freedom is what gets him even, you know, further over the line as far as a heel. And I love it. I love it. All right. Cat TV has a CNBC report. Ari Emanuel, the CEO of Endeavor, will be chief executive of the new company. McMahon will be executive chairman. Mark Shapiro, Endeavor's president, will continue their roles. Yeah, that's pretty much what the understanding was. And I'll add something to this. You're starting to see the wrestling websites clickbaiting what we talked about months and months and months and months and months, months, months ago. You have WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated. You have UFC, Endeavor, whatever. They have two separate offices. Let's just use a random number. WWE has 200 employees in their office. Endeavor has 200 employees in their office. Now they're going to have intercourse. And they're going to become one. Tonight I celebrate my life. They become one. What does that mean? It's not like the Brady Bunch. It's not like, you know, like, here's a story of WWE who had 200 very lucky girls and guys. Here's a story of a guy named Endeavor. And then they all became one, 400 employees. No. Pink slips. We don't need four people in an accounts payable here and four people in accounts payable there. We got to get rid of two and you get rid of two and now we'll put them together. That's common sense. If I have a company with 30 employees and I take over another company with 30 employees and we all move into one office, I'm not going to have 60 employees. I'm going to have to let 20, 30 people go. That's business. People are trying to make it like the evil McMahon is now letting... No. Anybody that's doing that, obviously that never was part of any type of, you know, real business, so... Oh, yeah, they scissored. By the way, that was cool to see Billy Gunn and the Acclaim win the Trios titles tonight. It also shows you, let's be honest, the House of Black's Trios tag team run was humorous, to say it that way. They took on FTR and CM Punk, which you knew there wasn't going to be a title change. And they took on AR Fox and some others, and they took on, like, they got the Trios titles, and it didn't feel like it was a priority. I think Buddy Matthews had more singles matches than he had Trios matches. You know, I'm happy that Billy Gunn got another championship. He's on his way out as far as wrestling in the ring. It's a nice moment. And the Acclaimed have worked hard. I have no issue with that at all. Gordon is asking, after Gunther breaks the Honky Tonk Man's record, who do I see taking the title off of him? As of right now, I don't know. I kind of lean towards Drew McIntyre, even if he turns heel. The problem is, I don't think it's going to be in the cards at that time. Drew McIntyre is going to ultimately feud with Seth Rollins. And Gunther may hold that champ. Gunther may end up fighting someone and it'd be a unification match. Or Gunther may fight someone that is on SmackDown right now that's not even on Raw. As of right now, there is nobody that I personally feel, maybe Finn Balor or Damian Priest down the line. I know right now some people are like, oh, I don't see that. I could see Finn Balor possibly dethroning Gunther. I will say this. Whoever it is, it's going to be a big deal. Chad Gable getting two wins on Gunther, it's WWE's way of, okay, we got to bring Gunther down just a little bit. We compared it to Asuka. When Asuka was so elevated that the only way it was believable in WWE's eyes that she could lose on a regular basis is we have to have James Ellsworth, you know, like get involved with the Carmella-Asuka feud. Right now, there is nobody that I could think of that I could say, oh yeah, I could see him dethroning him. I don't think it's Chad Gable. I don't think it's anybody right now. And it might not even be somebody on Raw right now. T-Smitty 3000 with a 5-spot. Thank you, T-Smitty. T-Smitty wants to know, I wish one of these podcasts or the journalists would ask Tony Khan why he continues to have pay-per-views in the same cities. There's a reason the Super Bowl rotates cities. Well, I say this way. AEW is very smart to go in areas where they have success. Chicago, if Chicago had a shitty turnout more than once, you probably wouldn't see them there as often as they are. When you get numbers like you did today at Wembley, yeah, you best damn believe that you're going to come back a year later. I do not have any issue with Tony Khan doing what he's doing. But when those markets start to dry up, then you'll see him not going as much as he used to. If Canada, certain areas of Canada, you know, if they would have drew a lot better, they would have announced future dates in those same areas. You know, Tony Khan, it's not just let me piss away money and I don't care if I draw 200. You know, he's not that stupid, but he's repeating areas that have had success. And as long as people keep paying that money, that's fine. You know, that's not much different of old school. You know, you had other promotions that would go to certain buildings, you know, and plus, you know, they're going back to Wembley a year from now. So if he does it once a year in Wembley, so what? You know, if he does, as long as they can put the workload in there and get, you know, the expenses, you know, in order. You know, even if I think they made a profit this weekend? I don't know. I don't know what the merchandise sales was. I don't know. But I don't see much wrong with it. Now, Smitty, if they go to an area and the area, the building seats 20,000 and they only draw 4, and then they announce a return engagement a couple of months from now and it's a 20,000 seat building and they draw 4, then you could say, you know, why do you keep going back in this area if the turnout is shitty, Smitty? I had to do that. I understand what you're saying, but until those areas dry up, why not? Seriously. All right, Brian plays. What's up, Brian? What do I think AEW has to do to carry the momentum now from All In going forward? It was obviously a big show for them, but we can't deny the product isn't as hot in the U.S. Brian, to be honest with you, the biggest mistake that AEW could do right now is to think because they drew 80,000 in the U.K. that suddenly there is this major influx of new fans. You cannot do that. You know, I could advertise something and draw an insane number. Look, you know, you can have 80,000 in England. All right, let me say it like this. How many times have you seen people online? This year's WrestleMania is a good example of that. WrestleMania 39, night one and night two were pretty damn good, right? Raw kind of sucked, didn't it? And SmackDown wasn't that much better. So in years past, once WrestleMania came and the night after the Raw after WrestleMania came, people are like, we're back to the same old shit. Wow, I can't believe how shitty the product. My point is, in a week or two, All In is a stat. It's a stat. You know, they drew 80,000 plus. But in 2 weeks, that won't matter. In 2 months, that won't matter. AEW cannot think that because they drew 80,000, that suddenly there is this gigantic new audience of fans, because you'll be in for a rude awakening. What I think AEW needs to do is they need to address the bullshit behind the scenes. They have a lot of people in that, not a lot, but enough in that company that have been coddled for 4 years. And if you're going to keep CM Punk in that company, if you're going to keep other veterans in that company, if you're going to keep people in that company that are more old school in their mindset and their mentality is a little bit different, then you have to start drawing the line across the board. Otherwise, get rid of your CM Punks, get rid of the others out there that don't tolerate this shit, and just run your company like, you know, to reflect. I don't want to use snowflakes because not everybody's a snowflake, but, you know, you cannot have this, you know, back in 1977, okay, back in 1977, the New York Yankees won the World Series. Manager Billy Martin and Reggie Jackson did not like each other, and Reggie came, well, he was with the Orioles for a short period of time, but he came from the A's, and he had a big contract at the time, and, you know, just believed that his shit didn't stink. And long story short, we had a captain here in New York of the Yankees, Thurman Munson, who unfortunately died in a plane crash in 1979. But where I'm getting to is that Reggie Jackson and Billy Martin hated each other. And Reggie Jackson got treated like shit sometimes. They had the World Series. Reggie hit 3 home runs in Game 6 against the Dodgers. And they won. And when he hit the 3rd home run, the first person he hugged was Billy Martin. In 1978, Billy Martin got fired from the Yankees because he had an incident with Reggie Jackson once again, where Reggie was just, you know, like jogging at a ball that landed in front of him. I think Jim Rice hit the ball, and Jim Rice ended up with a double. Billy Martin pulls him from the game. I have the game on video, and they had this big confrontation in the dugout. Billy Martin got fired. My point is this. There was a cartoonist here in New York that said the Bronx Zoo. It showed all of the Yankees, like, all at each other's throats. But they still managed to win in 77. But people knew sooner or later, you cannot have people at each other's throats. And just because you're winning, you're drawing, that overcomes all. And in the end, one person got fired over it. Another manager came in, Bob Lemon. They won the 78 World Series. But the point is that you cannot keep this atmosphere in the back and it not lead to like what happened today with Jack Perry and CM Punk. People that despise CM Punk are going to say, here's another guy that CM Punk can't get along with. Get rid of the fucking guy. And then on the opposite side, you're going to say, you know, here is a guy, you know, this young guy, Jack Perry, who's been coddled for 4 years and is like a little child, a baby. You know, didn't get what he wants. I can't use glass? Wah. Well, you watch what happens at All In. And look, I did glass. Ah, cry me a river. You know, this is Tony Khan's fault. At the end of the day, this is Tony. This cannot stay the way it is. They have to address this shit in the back. And I don't know if it gets any better because it feels like, you know, Tony Khan wants his heroes, wants his larger-than-life favorites, the big names. You know, he wants 15,000 people in the arena. It's also an ego thing. It's not just revenue, but the biggest mistake AEW could do is get 80,000 people and think next week that, oh, we're going to carry it over. We're going to get 15,000 in this building and 20,000 in this building and 10,000 in this building. And, you know, him saying they're the number one company in England, you know, okay, that's fine and everything, but, you know, you're not the number one company in the United States. It's not even close. And if you're the number one company in the UK, then run your shows in the UK. Move everybody to the UK and do all your shows in the UK. You know, it's not healthy. It's not healthy for that company. All right. We've run an hour. Let's start bringing this home. You know, we did 3 hours yesterday, and I know some of you still have not tuned in yet. So I don't want to overload you with 8 hours of shit. So, and then tomorrow, obviously, we got to talk about Raw. Yeah, AG brings up a point. The United Kingdom was very good for TNA. But that didn't suddenly mean that TNA, you know, it turned the corner and was this me, you know, had this. No, it was right back to where it was before. You got to understand something too, guys. And this is not a knock on AEW Tony Khan, but it's something you really should think about in the back of your head. We don't know how much was spent on All In. You know, All In, revenue-wise, still didn't even come close than what WWE made for SummerSlam, I think, or maybe WrestleMania's figures now. My point is that if All In brought in, let's say, $10 million, we don't know how much Tony Khan paid out. You know, if All In took in $10 million and Tony Khan paid out $15 million, all right, then this is more about, you know, perception and numbers. You know what? You can't do it All In. You can't turn it into a Meltzer rating. And that's what a lot of people are doing. That because a match is 5 stars, that everybody has to love it, that it's the greatest, they're turning All In into a Meltzer rating. That just because this had 5 stars, then, you know, stop the presses. They can't do that. We'll see what happens. All right. Michael is asking, do I see Chris Jericho retiring within the next year? No. He could. But I think he's going to trim his schedule back a little bit. I watched a little bit of Drips and Drabs. He could still go. But, you know, he's going to start winding down. Listen, Chris Jericho truly loves wrestling. I know some people don't like his ego and his, you know, abuse of power, some people say. But Jericho loves doing what he's doing. He's getting paid quite a bit as well. I don't think Jericho retires in the next year. I think they'll tease it. But they also tease Billy Gunn retiring. None of us thought Billy Gunn really was going to retire, just like none of us thought that Jack Perry was going to retire the FTW title. I don't think Jericho's going to retire yet. Thank you, Chaos, for the kind words. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. You know, it sucks, especially yesterday under the circumstances that it took a couple of people's deaths to have such a special show. But, you know, I think the tributes that we all did, not just me, but people in the chat, people in the comments, the story shared, I think it made it a very special episode. Listen, I'm not dogging on any other podcasters that covered the deaths of Terry Funk and Bray Wyatt, but I did check out parts of 4 podcasters that are bigger than me, and it felt like they were reading a wiki page. You know, it's different. It hits you differently. So, all right. Let's trying to share this around, share the love a little bit. So let's call for questions, everyone. Let's call. Bobby Means is asking, is Raquel Rodriguez the one to dethrone Rhea Ripley? Mammy will not be losing that championship anytime soon. Raquel Rodriguez, I'm a fan. I almost feel, even though she's won the tag titles a little bit, I don't have that same feeling about Raquel Rodriguez like I did in NXT. And I do blame WWE Creative for that because, you know, remember when she was smiling way too much? Like, she was a spitfire in NXT. You pissed off Raquel Rodriguez. She almost sounded like a female Ricky Ricardo. Like, she just would snap. And on the main roster, she's smiling. She's smiling. And it didn't fit what she was doing. I mean, look, she was ecstatic to be on the main roster. And every time she cut a promo, she would talk about being so happy to be there. But some of that attitude was missing. Now it's different. But I still feel she's got a little ways to go. But I will tell you that I have more investment in Raquel Rodriguez now than I did 6 months ago. But no, I don't think she's the one to dethrone Rhea Ripley. J. Cole is asking, would I have Dominic turn on Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania? I don't know if I would do anything like that at WrestleMania. I think at the end of the day, I think who would turn on who? Rhea Ripley turning on Dom Dom or Dom turning on Rhea? I almost feel like Rhea will turn on Dom. I almost think that's where they would go. I know Dominic Mysterio has done such a great job as an asshole that you cannot picture Dom Dom being a babyface anytime soon. And I agree with that. But I almost feel like Rhea Ripley is going to have to show Dom Dom that he was a gullible little boy. I think Rhea Ripley would be the one to turn on Dom Dom, not the opposite. I think Dominic Mysterio, listen, you know, when he thinks like he got street tough because he was in jail for 2 hours, I mean, it's funny and it's part of the storyline, but that makes Dom, you know, like he thinks that he's tough, but he's really not. And I think at the end of the day, I think Rhea Ripley turns on Dom, not the opposite. I will say I'm pleasantly surprised that the IWC did not take the TMZ announcement that Buddy Matthews and Rhea Ripley got engaged. I'm surprised the IWC did not take that and use that to ruin or try to ruin the storyline of Dominic Mysterio and Rhea Ripley. I mean, some people were posting on Dom's social media, do you see this? Do you see this? You see this? Trying to get Dom to comment on it. And they no-sold it. And it died down, which is good. Which is good. Some people out there truly think that Dominic Mysterio and Rhea Ripley are dating. So the fact that people believe that shows you how good of a job they're doing. But I think in the end, Rhea Ripley turns on Dominic. So I knew this was going to come up. Rocky Red, one of my thoughts on journalists asking Big Show about Bray Wyatt, where he looked uncomfortable answering. Were they wrong in answering him? Denise Salcedo asked him and got criticized for it. All right. I was avoiding this topic unless somebody asked. You ask, I always answer. If you notice, there's literally nothing that you could ask me that I won't answer. All right, I'll say it this way. People saying that Denise did not tell Paul White, Big Show, before the interview, listen, I'm going to bring up Bray Wyatt. I don't know if she did or she didn't. It felt like she didn't. I didn't have any problem whatsoever about a journalist asking Paul White or anybody else, what are your thoughts on, we just learned that Bray Wyatt died. I'll say this. Listen, hear me out, because I got more to say. Imagine if Denise did not ask him. I guarantee there'd be a lot of people out there. The fuck? How do you not ask him about the death of Bray Wyatt? It's everybody's talking about it. She was damned if she does, and she was damned if she didn't. The only issue that I had with Denise, and I say this respectfully, the only issue I had with her is the tone of voice. To me, it felt more of, you would have used that same tone of voice of, you know, you've been to Wembley before. What's your favorite restaurant when you go to Wembley? Like, it just felt, the tone of voice, it was somber, but it wasn't. Like, they just, when I heard the question, it just almost felt like there was no personal emotion attached to it. There was too much energy. That's my honest viewpoint of it. Listen, I don't deny it. 10 years ago, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, you know, I was still major asshole number one. And as I get older, and you could blame the missus for a lot of this. As I get older, you know, you kind of, I don't want to say grow up, but you kind of realize, like, you know what, you know, people change, you know. And me, I try to show respect as much as I can, you know, but I will still criticize and call people out where I see needed. I personally think it wasn't the question that Denise asked, because I would have asked. My God, look at Booker T's podcast. Look at Booker T's podcast. His co-host brought it up. Booker T found out live during his podcast that Bray Wyatt died. Booker T was almost in tears. Did anybody criticize his co-host for bringing it up? I don't think so. You know, honestly, I mean, if I'm in a profession and I'm being interviewed and something comes off the wires that somebody in my profession big just passed away, I don't see any issue with asking. People like, oh, it's too soon. What do you mean it's too soon? If she didn't ask it, people would be like, how could you ignore the fact that Bray Wyatt just died? How do you not even like ask somebody about that? I would have asked. I just know I wouldn't have asked it as energetic as it was. That's just my honest opinion. No, Gruss, I disagree. I don't want to say that she didn't show compassion, because, you know, I know some people, you know, listen, yesterday when I was doing this show, early on in the show, I got choked up. And then when I started talking about my family, I got choked up again. But then, like, I forced myself to, like, get out of it, snap out of it. You know, you gotta do a show here. And that's why when I said, when I was looking at tributes, remember when I said at the beginning of the show, you go down the rabbit hole, if you get this one, you got to do this one. Like, I was forcing myself to snap out, you know, like, of getting choked up. People handle things differently. Like I said, I don't want to say that she didn't have compassion. I don't think it was that. I just think that, you know, it just, the energy level, I think, was a little bit high still. But I saw nothing wrong with her asking him. Too soon? What does that mean? What does that mean, too soon? Like, if Paul White would have talked about the death already and was very, very choked up about it, and he was already on record about it, okay, I'm going to stay away from that topic. He's already on record. This is very, very raw for him. Like, put it this way. Well, I'm not in that situation, so I'm not even going to go any further. I didn't see anything wrong with asking that question. Because if she didn't ask that question, I think people would have ragged on her too. Mark DiMartino, did we ever talk about the results from the sexiest female wrestler from each promotion poll in early July? I know people posted it in the comment section. If you go in the comment section, you know, you could see everybody's choice. The reason why I didn't get into poll results is because almost nobody responded. Like, you had a few people here, a few people there, but, you know, I'm not going to do a poll with only nine people. You know, I don't mind doing polls, and I try to get people engaged, but, you know, and only, it's like even the watch parties. Like, the last 2 weeks, I figured, okay, Bloodline, NXT Heatwave, celebration of Bray Wyatt, Edge's retirement. You know, like, if that doesn't draw more than 15 people to a watch party, nothing is, unless I give away shit. So, you know, I tried to get people engaged, but almost nobody responded, so that's why I didn't talk about it. So, but yeah, Nikita Lyons was absolutely on the list. I know Kiana James and NXT was on the list. Listen, go to the episode and you can go check it out. Nobody had any bad answers. One person was a little bit, you know, writing Giselle Shaw and Nyla Rose. And I'm not saying anything negative about them, but I know what the person was trying to go with that. So whoever you feel is fine with me. Gigi Dolan was absolutely on that list. Trust me, if this was 15, 20 years ago, we probably would have had like the hottest ass in wrestling tournament. And I think Gigi Dolan would be right up there on the list. But nah, we don't do that. We don't do that. Dream says bring back Mean DT. I don't even know what that means. You know, it's like I criticize a lot. Sometimes I criticize too much. DT, I feel you criticize a little bit too much here. You know, I just go wherever it goes. I'm just not going to be an asshole just to be an asshole. There's plenty of other people out there in wrestling and non that, you know, that's how to get paid, to be assholes. I'm not a Brad Shepherd. So, all right. Let's wrap this up in about 10 minutes. JS says Denise's voice is naturally sort of upbeat or extroverted. So to the average person, it might seem like she lacked somberness. Yeah, that's why, like I said, you know, I really don't have, like, you know, much to say about that. But, you know, that's the way somebody is, you know, like, what am I supposed to say? You know, but I personally, like I said, I think she asked the right question. I think she asked the right question. I mean, how do you not bring it up? You know, imagine if you're interviewing a news journalist and, you know, a really big, popular news journalist they used to work with just came off the Newswire and that person passed away. Listen, you know, what's your thoughts on, you know, I know that, and let's also remember that the news broke the day before or early, you know what I mean? It's not like it broke while they were doing the interview. So Paul White knew already. You know, that's something you got to think about too. Booker T had no idea, but Paul White knew. So, all right. Vance Rawlings is asking, is Tony Khan doing a long Roman title thing with Orange Cassidy? No, no. Roman Reigns is the leader of a billion-dollar conglomerate. He is the leader of a major, major promotion. I'm not saying AEW is not a major promotion, but Orange Cassidy is not the tribal chief of AEW. Tony Khan loves Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy does work behind the scenes. Orange Cassidy is viewed professionally and personally as one of the top guys in that company. So Tony Khan is rewarding him by giving him the most legitimate title reign in AEW. I see people, and I'm not criticizing MJF in any way. I see people saying MJF is having one of the greatest title reigns in pro wrestling history. And I'm like, really? Kurt Angle wrestled 88 times in 2006. MJF has wrestled 16 times, and we're in August. You know, like, you know, it's like, might be a little stretch. If you want to say in recent memory, fine. But Orange Cassidy, you know, his reign is strong, but that's because Tony Khan keeps putting him in matches. Tony Khan keeps giving him 10 minutes in matches. Tony Khan keeps giving him victories in matches. So if somebody could perform and the crowd is into it and they're getting 10-minute matches every other week and they're winning and retaining every other week, of course their title reign is going to look strong. Simple as that. Shinsuke Nakamura had one of the worst Intercontinental Championship reigns in history. I think it was the IC title. And what, do you have the belt like 3 months and he defended it twice? You know, like, it's all about perception. Tony Khan gives that much time to Orange Cassidy, and that's why it's perceived. But it's not a Roman Reigns run. Orange Cassidy's doing a good job with that title. But the problem with having so many titles is that you can't do that with everybody. The Trios titles, honestly, really? CM Punk spray paints X on the AEW World Championship, calls himself the real champion, and in storyline, MJF says nothing about it. I mean, they have issues with a lot of their titles. They have too many fucking titles in AEW. And that's why Orange Cassidy's run stands out so much. Because while Orange Cassidy is having 20, 30, 40 title defenses, other people are having 2 and 3. All right. OTS Tribal Queen. I've been waiting for somebody to say that. Orange Cassidy will defend a title against anybody. He doesn't care. Kevin, he defends the title of who Tony Khan puts on the paper. But Orange Cassidy does a good job. I cannot criticize Orange Cassidy. Gruss says he's AEW's Gunther. It's not. Listen, just because his longevity and number of title retentions doesn't mean it's. Yeah, it's like comparing Gunther, you know, when he loses to Nikki Bella's loss. I get why people say that, because you feel once he breaks the record, okay, now we could put it on somebody else. I get it. And I don't blame people for feeling that way. But, you know, just because they did that with Nikki Bella, they didn't do that with others, you know. And Gunther is money, man. All right. 3 or 4 more minutes and we are done. All right. Who hasn't asked a question yet? Yeah, I agree. OTS Tribal Queen. Orange Cassidy came on too strong, but he's really come into his own. Orange Cassidy, see, you know the thing is, Orange Cassidy, like, I saw him work indies before he ever did anything in AEW. And you know he could go. But his whole gimmick is, whatever, whenever, whatever. You know, it's like, like, that's what his gimmick is. Pockets. You know, I'm too lazy. You know, oh. I know it's goofy, but the thing is I always compared it to Maria Kanellis. And I know some of you out there that never heard this comparison are probably saying right now, DT, what the hell are you talking about? Maria Kanellis, when she was in WWE, was an airhead. She came across as an idiot, a dummy. Like, she just sounded like she was clueless. That might be the, Maria Kanellis is not clueless. But her character, when she would be standing going, like, yeah, she was clueless. And then I think they did the trial of Eric Bischoff. isn't it Maria Kanellis that started talking and saying all these crazy words? And everybody's like, that's what Orange Cassidy was with his wrestling. Orange Cassidy, what he was doing in the ring is equivalent to Maria Kanellis acting like a total airhead in WWE. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, she starts talking like a scholar. And Orange Cassidy, when he started wrestling and hitting moves and doing dives and doing this, people are like, holy shit, he can fucking wrestle. It's all about the character. And he backs it up now. And that's why Orange Cassidy, I don't have any issues with his run. All right. M. Hawk is asking, is Damian Sandow the biggest creative fumble that WWE had? No, I don't think so. Damian Sandow was never going to be a main eventer. And I don't mean that in a negative way. He was never going to be a main eventer. So they utilized him as best as they could. Damian Sandow, to be able to do what he did with The Miz, I mean, just let that sink in. If you're going to criticize Orange Cassidy for going, oh, with his feet, oh, explain to me Damian Sandow just beating himself up in the ring, doing back bumps and flipping around. That's exposing the business 10 times worse. And it got over. No. To me, in recent memory, to me, I think the biggest flub that WWE has done, and this is kind of hard for me to answer on spur of the moment without thinking, because now you're asking, you're not asking, but I got to go back like 15 years of wrestling and WWE that think like, I think for me, where they missed the boat, the worst is probably Rusev Day. The way, again, the way he was selling shirts and everybody was into Rusev Day, and then there, that claim, which is legit, that Vince thought the fans weren't like cheering with him, they were mocking him or something. Like it was almost like satire to them. I think the biggest flub was Rusev Day. Rusev Day, and remember, this is before Tribal Chief shit. They could have capitalized on that shit. You know, it almost, I don't want to compare Rusev Day to LA Knight, but, you know, let it sink in. Imagine if WWE ended up treating LA Knight the way they handled Rusev Day. You know, so I think they really blew it with Rusev Day. It should have gone a lot further, and it didn't. And you now understand why. And to me, that was a big blunder by WWE. And let me tell you something. AEW is committing a big blunder on Miro right now. You know, we talked about it. Isn't it kind of weird looking back on it? We talked for 3 weeks straight about how shitty they use a Miro and Powerhouse Hobbs on Collision. And the week before we did that episode and we brought up who Powerhouse Hobbs and Miro had beaten on Collision, and it was a fucking joke. And then a week later, suddenly they're not only on TV, but they're battling each other. I thought that was pretty interesting. But at the end of the day, you know, they're going to fight next week on the pay-per-view. Somebody is going to come out, I think, on the losing side, unless they do something stupid where it's a double disqualification, which AEW never does. But somebody's going to come out on the shit end of the stick. And after All Out, we're going to say, wow, Didima, he's back and he's beaten up jabronis and he lost to Hobbs. Or we're going to say, Hobbs, the Book of Hobbs. You know, he beat jabronis and lost to Miro. Somebody's going to come out on the shit end of that stick next week. All right. Charlie is saying, notice Sabu, Cena, Vengeance, Extreme Match. Why does Sabu point? Look, you got to look at interviews with him. Some people point to the sky because of a fallen loved one. You know, that's really why people do it. In the case of Roman Reigns, you know, he is the one. So you have to look at everybody individually. Some people do it. You know, you see some people go like this. You know, they're paying tribute to a fallen parent, somebody that, you know, they loved in wrestling. You know, it's everybody's different. All right. Where is it? Anthea? I guess you're saying Athena? No idea. Well, she's doing the Ring of Honor stuff, so. All right, last question, and we're going to get out of here. Cat TV, what was the difference between Vince Sr. and Vince Jr.? Do I think Vince Sr. wanted to get everyone over, and Vince Jr. does what he does with his few selections? Boy, that is so loaded. We are going back in time. Way back. Back in time. The short story of that is Vince Sr. was from a time where the business was protected. Vince Sr. respected pro wrestling as a sport and wanted to keep it perceived as a legitimate sport. Believe it or not, somebody on Twitter 2 days ago posted a clip of Vince McMahon Sr. from 1979, and somebody asked him if wrestling was predetermined or legitimate. And Vince Sr. is protecting pro wrestling, and he doesn't come out and say it. Exhibition, you know, you just check out his answer. Would Vince McMahon Jr., the Vince that's alive right now, Vince McMahon Jr. always looked at it as spectacle. It's sports and entertainment scissored, combined. I have clips on my YouTube channel from TV that I taped in 1985 where Vince McMahon called pro wrestling sports entertainment. Vince Sr. always looked at wrestling as a protected, you know, you protected wrestling, that everybody outside of it perceives that it's real. You know, respected the business. You know, I'm not saying that Vince Jr. didn't respect the business, but Vince Jr. looked at it as a form of entertainment. So, two totally different scenarios. What if Vince didn't buy WWE from his father? Honestly, I think... See, I can't even answer that question because his dad died not too long after that. Like, even if he didn't buy it from his father died. You remember, what year did he die? 1982? I don't remember if Sr. was alive in 83. He had to have died around 82, 83. So even if he didn't buy from his dad passed away a short time after, he would have taken it over. So it wouldn't have mattered, to be honest with you. WrestleMania didn't happen until, what, 85? So... WrestleMania, you know, Vince Jr. had that vision. Vince Sr. passing away did not, you know, interfere with Hulkamania. Thank you, Charlie. May of 84 is when he died. Yeah, so it was right around that time. So it did not affect WrestleMania 1 and Hulkamania. So... all right, last question. What percentage of AEW's roster would I say is former WWE talent? I have no idea. I have no idea. Honestly, I'll answer that this way. I've been doing this since 97. Not saying I brag, but I'll say it to make a point. When I started doing the wrestling hotline, WCW was still around. ECW was still around. NWA TNA wasn't even a thing yet. XPW wasn't even a thing yet. And my point is that when NWA TNA started in 2002, it felt like WCW, like somebody trying to recreate WCW. When Vince McMahon did not pursue WCW in the WWE in 2001, and they did Invasion in storyline and the angle instead, which led to the pay-per-view, which was a big success for them. Once you realize that WCW was not coming back in WWE, in 2002, we thought that someone else is going to attempt to give us a different form of WCW. The problem is, in 2002, yeah, I'm old. When TNA came around in 2002, you had to pay like $10 every week to watch it, which I thought was ridiculously stupid, because usually you give something for free and then that gives you, it builds to something where you want to pay for it to see the outcome. You know, it's like WWE. You watch Raw or SmackDown every week, and it leads to, you know, now we have streaming Peacock, but in the past it would lead to, you got to buy the pay-per-view to see the culmination of a feud. With TNA, NWA TNA, you had to pay every week to watch. So there was no build-up. There was no build-up. So if you watched TNA for four straight weeks, you paid for four straight weeks. There was no build-up to a major event because every week it was just TV. So, Charlie, I talked about CM Punk at the very beginning of the show. So my point is, after a while, when they stopped doing the weekly pay-per-views, then it started to feel like we were getting WWE rejects. Anybody remember that in the early days of TNA? Ah, TNA signed all the WWE rejects. Like, the people that WWE don't want, they're going to TNA. And it was true in some ways, but in a lot of ways it wasn't. The reason why people got upset at it is because you had big egos that were in WWE that went to TNA, and they would leapfrog a lot of the originals. You know, the AJ Styles was still getting a push, but you had your Elix Skippers, you had, you know, all these young guys at the time, and after a while they were being leapfrogged by people that were just coming in. They leave WWE, they go there. So there was a lot of animosity amongst wrestling fans. It felt like TNA was just signing WWE rejects. In the case of AEW, though, it does not feel like they're signing WWE rejects. There's been a few that WWE released, and AEW not only snatched them up, but put them on TV. I'll give you two great examples right now. Two Dimes and AQA. Does anybody remember AQA? AQA. Remember that women's wrestler from NXT that they let go and they put her on the TV? What's going on with AQA today? What's going on with Two Dimes today? My point is, there was a point where it seemed like, you know, Tony Khan was snatching up a few people that were released by WWE, and, oh, we're going to show them that we're going to do it, and then they just, you know, literally disappear. But overall, AEW is not signing, I shouldn't say WWE rejects, that's kind of rough, WWE cast-offs. I think that was the better term that we used back in the day. WWE cast-offs. NWA, TNA, TNA was signing all the WWE cast-offs. AEW doesn't really do that much now. And the ones that they have signed, that they put on TV, they actually have worth. So, all right. I'm going to get out of here. I'm tired, not just physically, emotionally. I get to go on vacation in less than 5 days. So, like I said earlier, we got a busy week this week. Tomorrow night on Raw, we will do your Raw post show. They are doing another tribute to Bray Wyatt and Terry Funk. I heard that they may actually do something a little bit extra for Bray Wyatt. You know, I wanted to say this, and you're going to hear me repeat this tomorrow on the show as well. We were kind of critical about the hardcore match that happened on SmackDown between the Brawling Brutes and the Street Profits. And I had some people sending me links about the Kentucky State Athletic Commission, this and that. And in hindsight, I say this right now. If WWE could not put on even a watered-down hardcore match, knowing that they're in Kentucky, why not wait until Monday? You have 3 hours instead of two. Your Raw USA Network. Right after Raw, what is on? Temptation Island. You ever see the commercials? Hey, is she going to suck my... Yeah, and I don't even think they beep it out. You know, so they could have done a hardcore match on Raw. And maybe you do a Bray Wyatt tribute match on SmackDown. Why not? They did, technically, with LA Knight and Finn Balor. Why not just save the hardcore match for Raw? Bray Wyatt, SmackDown, you know, you still mention and celebrate on Raw, but you have the tribute match for Bray on SmackDown, the tribute match for Terry Funk on Raw. That's what I would have done. Guys, like I said, Monday night, we'll recap Raw. Should be a quick, pretty easy show. Tuesday, Kevin and I will be doing payback predictions and a preview. We'll see what matches are added tomorrow. Then on Wednesday, we will talk more about this situation with CM Punk and the Jungle Man that's still a boy. And then on Thursday, I will record the second half of the Q&A, and that will drop next week. I will be on vacation once again from September 1st to September 9th. I will definitely stop by social media, maybe the community section on YouTube, maybe Patreon, just say hello during the week, see what's going on. Believe it or not, there's hurricanes passing through Florida, I think tomorrow and Tuesday, but I'm not flying until Friday. And supposedly the weather is supposed to be good. So I should be safe. So, yeah, the Q&A is going to be posted September 4th. I already recorded the first half. I'm recording the second half because some people sent some stuff about Bray. And, yeah, that'll be recorded this week and it'll drop next week. So, or the following week. My friends, thank you as always for your support. For everybody who's new. Because we got a big influx of new subscribers from yesterday. Didn't even know about the channel. I welcome you. And I want to, in some ways, apologize. I know some of you had never tuned into my stuff before. Didn't even know that I was the guy that used to do the wrestling hotline. I'm sorry that the death of Bray Wyatt and Terry Funk, not necessarily Bob Barker. He lived to be 99. We're jealous. But I'm sorry that the deaths of two, you know, big names in pro wrestling is what brought you here. But I am very proud of the episode we did yesterday. I can promise you everything that we talked about was 100% sincere. Not easy to talk about death, life, and mortality, you know, was not an easy show yesterday. But, you know, one thing I have learned doing this since 1997, when you are genuine in what you say and you're talking from here, you don't have to script that. You don't have to rehearse it. In some ways, you don't even have to think about it first. I came in yesterday with one thing in front of me, and that was the wiki page for Terry Funk, because I wanted to be reminded some of his other titles that he had won over the years. Everything else was from here and here, because that's how much I cared about both of those guys. You have your favorites in wrestling, whoever it is, from old school, new school, AEW, whoever it is, you'd think about your biggest favorites. I probably could hit you with 25 trivia questions about your favorite, and you'd probably get it right 24 out of 25 times. When it's your favorite, you don't need to research and rehearse and think and try to act like you know something when you don't. because everything is here and everything is here. And I think that came across yesterday. You know, we had every emotion possible, somber, celebration, appreciation. You know, it sucks. One person reminded us that we're all going to go at some time and all our heroes are going to leave us. And the other person showed us that, you know, it could be taken from you just like this, unexpectedly. Bray worked so hard to return. And just out of nowhere, it was cut short. Sucks. But for everybody who was tremendously affected by Bray Wyatt, especially, because Terry Funk lived a long life. I mean, we don't want to see our heroes leave. But in the case of Bray, like I said earlier, you know, if he really affected you personally, if you had an interaction with him, I've had more than one person say to me that he truly got me out of some really dark times. It's a lot of little personal stories that are coming out. Something tells me that he would want you to celebrate what he has done. That if he got you out of the darkness, stay out of the darkness. Because that's how you pay tribute to him the most. That's how you carry on his legacy. He pulled me out when I needed it the most. Well, you want to celebrate him? You stay out of that hole. Do your best. Sometimes you may have no choice and fall back in, but carry on his legacy. Celebrate him. It's the best thing you could do. You know, I miss my grandmother. My grandmother died in 1991. My grandmother's the one that got me in wrestling. And to this day, those who knew my grandmother see little things that I say and do. And I brought this up before, and I'll have my aunt say to me, "That's your grandmother talking." Even now, sometimes some people will say, and my father's still here, and some people say to me, "Oh, that's your dad." You know, like they see things about me, and that's me just carrying on how they have molded me and helped me. So, guys, thank you, everybody. Have a good night, and I hope to catch you on the shows later this week. Be well.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who've claimed they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.